Season 3, episode 3 of the Woke-ish podcast. This is Ebony.
And this is Zelma.
And Happy New Year to everyone.
Yeah.
We're recording this on January 2nd, and we wanted to discuss some of our anxieties around the new decade. So Zelma and I were talking before we started recording, and she was mentioning that a lot of the stuff that she's seeing on social media is about, like, how amazing the new year is going to be and how amazing the new decade is going to be and, like, you know, what you should be looking forward to and how you should have this positive, you know, this kind of positive outlook about the future. But we also know that one of the things that looking forward to the future often kind of produces is anxieties, you know, because there's, like, a lot of uncertainty. And then, I mean, also there's just, per usual, a lot of kind of really terrible or scary things that are happening around the world. So some of that stuff we're going to talk about. But, you know, just in case anybody out there might be feeling not so, like, super positive and, like, hype about what's to come, you know, we are here with you and we'll talk about some of our own feelings about it.
Yeah, because our last episode was about a recap of, you know, the things that we learned and how that was a good thing. So it was just telling Ebony that I also wanted to talk about things that for me scare me and make me anxious, to kind of be more transparent about, like, for me, I'm a positive person, but there's also a lot of anxiety and fear. So I just wanted to just kind of show that, to normalize that, especially for people our age, where we've just growing up exposed to and with so much knowledge. I think that, I mean, there's studies that show that we're a more anxious group of people anyway. So I just wanted to talk about that in this episode so that, you know, if you are feeling, like Ebony said, positive sometimes, but also nervous and anxious other times within the same day or even the same hour, like we are.
At the same time.
Or at the same time. Like, this episode kind of is the balance to our last episode.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll start now with our shout-out segment.
Yes, and our first shout-out is for Barack and Michelle Obama, who were both voted the most admired man and woman in the U.S. of 2019. What's crazy about that for me is that apparently Barack and Donald Trump were tied for the most admired man, which I think highlights the current divide in the country, that you have what I would consider two very opposite people in not only their political ideas and behavior and policies, but also just in their personal background. I mean, you see Donald Trump's Twitter, and he's going on rants every day about how everyone else makes mistakes and how he does no wrong. And then you go to Obama's social media, and he's, like, telling you what books he really loved and, you know, why he loves Lizzo. Like, it's just – so I thought when I saw that, I was like, I don't even know how to feel about it.
I think Trump paid for his nomination.
You think so?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
But I also wouldn't be surprised if people really thought he was a man to be admired in this country.
I mean, okay, yeah. So, one, I would not be surprised, but also I feel like a lot of that is staked on the fact that he is the current president. So
true.
The fact that, like, you're in, like, you are tied with the former president, who, I mean, I'm biased. I just don't know why people. I think, you know, actually, I want to take that back, and I won't be biased. There are some Donald Trump does have some admirable qualities, like the fact that you can manage to just be yourself, even if yourself is a shitty person, and still be voted and elected president.
Yeah.
That says something. Like, so he's not – he isn't, like, downplaying or beating around the bush or sugarcoating who he is. He is just himself. And he was fine with being himself and taking the risk that he – you know, that people may not support him. And somehow, like, he was more confident that there were people like him in the country than the other side was. But yeah, he took a risk and he's just himself. And I guess that that's sort of, those are sort of admirable qualities.
Yeah. And then apparently, so Michelle Obama was also named the world's most admired woman in July. So that's good.
No competition there.
Yeah. I think like, so even though it was just kind of jarring to be like, oh, man, you keep forgetting. If you surround yourself with only people who think the same way, I don't, unfortunately. I have a lot of people who think very differently from me. Yeah. But sometimes you can't. Like when I come to school, I do forget that there are people who have very, very strong feelings for the Trumps. Mm-hmm. But I you know, shout out to both of them. It doesn't take away from the fact that they're still, you know, admired people. I admire them every, you know, I think even as their positions aside, you know, post first lady and president, they still do amazing things. So shout out to both of them.
Yeah.
And then our second shout out goes to 28-year-old Darian Rojas, a Cuban migrant who is currently being held up in a migrant camp in Mexico near the border as he waits for his asylum application to process. So if you don't know or if you can remember, Trump made a passed new policy mandating that now if you want your application for asylum to be processed, you have to wait in Mexico to do it. So no longer coming through the border and waiting in the United States, but waiting in Mexico before you get your response. So he's currently in the migrant camp. Apparently, he is the only full-time doctor in the border camp, and it has about, I think, 2,500 people. And he holds office hours every day, but is also on call. So when he's not doing his office hours, he's responding to emergencies or people calling for him. He does get paid, but only about $30 US a day, and apparently has not taken a day off since he started working in October.
Wow.
I was reading more about him to see, you know, how he's Cuban and ended up in Mexico. But he fled Cuba because he was a doctor in Venezuela. And if you're aware of the turmoil in Venezuela, it's a dictatorship. And so he was speaking out against the current president. So they deported him, basically, back to Cuba. So when he was in Cuba, he was also getting pushed back from the Cuban government. They, because he's very vocal about his political beliefs. So they barred him from practicing medicine in Cuba, and he said that he was being harassed by police. So he felt unsafe and decided to leave. And the U.S. used to have a policy in place where if you reached land and you were Cuban, you could get asylum. But Obama ended that. And then Trump also continued that. So he no longer can claim asylum because he's Cuban. And the reason why Cubans could claim asylum is because they also were political. There was a political instability in that country. And so now he's currently waiting. And instead of just waiting and, you know, not, you know, I guess, I don't know, I mean, I guess as a doctor, you kind of take the oath to do no harm and to help people, but you also don't have to go to the extent that this man is doing where you don't take a day off.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to shout him out because it's an example of people who are put in these terrible situations, but always keep, you know, doing what they think is right and in turn helping people. So shout out to Darian Rojas. I hope that in some way this helps his application process, that they can see that he does want to do well, that he is, although I don't think that we should only give people who we quote unquote think deserve to be citizenship or asylumship. But I just hope good comes back to him because he didn't have to go above and beyond, and he is. And so, you know, shout out to him. And he's only 28.
Yeah.
So at this young age. And
I need to get my shit together.
Yeah. Yeah.
And our last shout out goes to Chief Seattle Club, which is a nonprofit dedicated to ending Native homelessness. They launched the Eagle Village Settlement in the Sodo, I think that's how you say it, Sodo, neighborhood of Seattle back in November. This groundbreaking new homeless shelter in Seattle is the first facility of its kind that has been designed by Native Americans for Native Americans. And it has already helped to take in dozens of people from the streets. Despite how Native Americans only make up about 1% of the U.S. population, they make up 10% of the country's homelessness. Further, there are more than 1,000 Native Alaskans, American Indians, and Pacific Islanders living in Seattle alone. So shout out to this nonprofit for helping to reduce homelessness in Seattle. And yeah, I mean, just in general, you know, even in, I mean, there, homelessness has just gotten so out of control. Mm-hmm. So at, like, every major city that I've visited, even outside the country, like there, I mean, it's just it's become like a fabric of the society, mm-hmm. you know, like an acceptable fabric. Like people are not, you know, and I'm from LA where we have Skid Row and that's like blocks and blocks and blocks of homelessness, like a homeless community. And it's just like an acceptable part of society, you know, and like we aren't startled by it. We aren't questioning why, you know, it's growing at the rate that it is. And there is empty space and there are empty homes that could be and should be devoted to helping to reduce it. But a lot of the shelters and stuff like that, they have not been improved in decades. They haven't been expanded, you know, and yeah. So I don't know. It just it really makes me sad because the cost of living everywhere is only going up, mm-hmm. you know, and our economy is only, you know, getting more constrained. And so, yeah, it seems like it's just a problem that's gonna continue. But yeah, so I guess I could have saved that for our what's being slept on when we're talking about all the sad stuff. But yeah, so shout out to Chief Seattle Club for doing something really needed for the Seattle community. And now we'll move on to our In the Know segment. Extra, extra, read all about it. And now for our In the Know segment.
Yes, so we wanted to start our In the Know. It will get progressively sadder, but these stories aren't as sad as they could be. Yeah. But so the first story I wanted to highlight was about how the birth of babies, because we talk a lot about, you know, my niece, she was born on Christmas, so I always think like how, you know, and my baby was born around Christmas, so I'm like, oh, Christmas is a really cool time to be born. But then you think about New Year's, cool, and in particular this new year, because it's the start of a new decade. So this new decade brought many babies. So UNICEF, the United Nations Children's Agency, estimates that some 400,000 babies were born on New Year's Day.
Wow.
So they said it was an auspicious day for childbirth around the world. UNICEF said that the Pacific Island nation of Fiji will most likely have delivered 2020's first baby, and it's expected to have 39 births on January 1st. The United States will deliver the last baby of New Year's Day, where women are expected to welcome 10,452 babies into the world. UNICEF says over half those births will happen in just 8 countries. India, with 67,385 expected births, followed by China, Nigeria, Pakistan, Indonesia, the United States, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Ethiopia, with about 8,493 expected births. So those babies add to the world's current population of about 7.7 billion, a population that the UN expects to peak at nearly 11 billion in 2100. Much of that growth will happen in just 9 countries, and 4 of them are in Africa: Egypt, Tanzania, Nigeria, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. So I just thought that was interesting because sometimes our view of the world or of our world only includes our city or our state or our country. So I just thought, like, especially us as Americans, it's like we're not the only ones having babies, but a lot of countries are having a lot of babies. So there's like a lot of people, you know, the United States doesn't, I think sometimes people, the joke is that we see ourselves as being like the most important country in the world. And so I think it's just interesting to highlight that numerically, there are so many countries that have like a lot more people. But I also think it's really interesting just to see how this world, like how big it is, like 7.7 billion people right now and 400,000 babies born in one day, like almost 500,000 babies born in one day.
That's so crazy. And yeah. Nearly a quarter of them came from India.
I know. India. India and China are the countries with the biggest populations. Yeah.
In one day.
Yeah. So also, like, it matters to follow what's going on in those countries because they have a lot of people. Yeah. But I just thought it was kind of, as a person who's interested in, like, trends and demographic growth, I just thought I was really interested in this story because it kind of just highlight. It's a good thing. It's good to know that babies are still, you know, because when I was reading this article, they were highlighting how, like, they were highlighting one baby born in Pakistan, saying how a lot of babies were dying of really preventable diseases. So even though there's lots of babies being born, a lot of them die. So it's just nice to take a moment to just be really, reflective of all these babies being born, but also being aware that in a lot of countries, including our own with maternal mortality, but in a lot of countries, health is a very vulnerable and I think sometimes taken for granted thing, where just because you're born today in 2020 doesn't mean that you're guaranteed, every baby is guaranteed to have the unequal chance of surviving. So just wanted to, take a moment of reflection, to be grateful for me that, my baby made it through a year, and also just kind of happy that there are, in that one day, there was a lot of families that were just welcoming a new addition to their
definitely gives you
family.
Hope for the future,
Yeah.
I mean, again, foreshadowing to our what's being slept on segment, but, it's that – I feel like for every baby born, that is an opportunity to better the world, And, I mean – because that's somebody that's fresh, And so hopefully we have enough good people raising good people to offset all of the other BS going on.
Yeah.
So
our second story is about new laws that were taking into effect in 2020. So marijuana is now legal in the state of Illinois. Anyone 21 and older can buy and possess recreational marijuana beginning in the new year. However, under the law, Illinois residents will be able to purchase and possess 30 grams of cannabis, 5 grams of cannabis concentrate, and cannabis-infused products containing no more than 500 milligrams of THC. People who don't live in Illinois can buy half of each of those amounts. And then medical patients can buy marijuana seeds and grow up to 5 plants at their home as long as the plants are kept out of public view. And I think what's also great that a lot of other laws that allow for recreational marijuana don't always contain is that this law also pardons individuals with nonviolent convictions for amounts of cannabis up to 30 grams. Yeah. And 30 grams is a lot.
And that's a big deal in Illinois.
Yeah, because that's where Chicago is.
Yeah.
So I thought I want, I didn't just want to highlight this because it's like, ooh, marijuana's cool. I want to talk about it. I wanted to highlight it because I think, like, when we think about marijuana laws, it's really popular and catchy to talk about states, legalizing it. But I think it's also important to talk about the impact that it has had historically in terms of incarceration, mass incarceration of individuals, particularly for the communities that Abby and I come from, communities of color. So I thought that it was awesome that this is definitely a state where I'm really happy that this is happening because it does contain Chicago, which we know is always highlighted for having large numbers of people who are incarcerated for drug-related offenses. Right. So hopefully states can look to this and see that this is something that, people are willing to pass and people are it should be on the table.
Okay. And then our next topic is about Nick Gordon, who is the former partner of Bobby Christina, who is the daughter of Whitney Houston. And he passed away, I think yesterday, at the age of 30. And so I wanted to report on this because this is a story that has been I mean, it's gotten major news coverage for now, I feel like, a decade.
Yeah.
You know, like the Houstons and Bobby Brown and Bobby Christina and all of that. And it seems like there's some sort of, like, I mean, they still haven't reported on the cause of death, but back in 2016, Nick Gordon was found liable for Bobby Christina's death following a wrongful death lawsuit in civil court. And it just all feels so eerie. Like, there's some sort of, like, omen or just bad juju over the family. Like, how, I mean, it's unusual for someone to die of natural causes at 30. So yeah. I don't know necessarily that there was any foul play, but because I kind of, you know, grew up with Whitney Houston as, you know, this, I mean, exceedingly talented and, I mean, famous singer. But then also, like, all the controversy about her relationship
yeah.
and her family and, you know, all of the stuff surrounding her daughter's death. This just, I mean, it just felt very, very strange.
Yeah, yeah. It's just kind of like the Kennedys
yeah.
where a lot of people just died mysteriously.
Yeah.
But here it's like, even if we were to say three of these were drug related, or the three deaths, Whitney's, her daughter's, and now Nick Gordon. It's, like, sad.
Yeah. I mean, we have a huge – even, you know, tying this into some of the other stuff that we've talked about today, you know, we have our country has a huge drug
yeah.
issue.
Yeah,
a huge drug issue, which, I mean, now they're trying to, deracialize – but also sort of kind of do something about, I mean, at least they claim, the newer candidates claim to be trying to do something about, you know, the fact that there are people that have all of these resources and they are dying of drug overdoses,
yeah.
you know, it speaks volumes.
Yeah.
It speaks volumes that those with the most resources are suffering.
Yeah, it doesn't discriminate in terms – addiction doesn't discriminate
yeah.
in terms of economic or racial.
Yeah.
The way that it's, you know – there's other things that
yeah.
are racialized.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, no, I saw that and I thought, like, that was sad. It just – it's anything related to this family, it's just sad. And it makes you sad because it just with so much potential for – and she was so great, a great singer in the movies that she did.
Yeah.
And for us who were here or, like you said, like, she was a pivotal person
mm-hmm.
in growing up and seeing, like, oh, man, women of color, like, being looked up to and admired. And then you see these stories and you're like, I mean, it's just – you just never know.
Yeah, and I pretty regularly, like, will pull up to next to somebody at the intersection and they'll be jamming out to it. And I'm like,
yeah.
dang, that's
– yeah.
Yeah. Okay, and then our last story is one that is kind of all over the news right now.
Mm-hmm.
But the Victorian government has declared a state of disaster due to severe bushfires in Australia's Capital Territory in New South Wales and Victoria. So apparently the smoke from the fire has created a thick cloud over the two cities, which has now the city has now been rated the worst air quality or to have the worst air quality in the world.
Mm.
I've seen the images and it's like it's like a reddish orange kind of glow all over the city. And strangely, there were like I saw pictures of people still at the beach. I'm like, why would you think that that's okay? So Australia, the Australia Post suspended all deliveries. Some schools have closed and workplaces are sending employees home due to smoke infiltrating buildings across the city. On Twitter, many residents are reporting that air purifiers and masks are completely sold out all over the city. And that they've been told that, you know, like you won't be able to find one here because... I mean, everybody
is
so desperate.
Them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy. And then Zelma had read a few stories about what
yeah.
was going on with the animals.
The animals. Yeah. I was showing Ebony there are pictures of people like housing animals inside of their
wild animals.
Yeah. Like koalas and kangaroos inside of their houses because so when we think about the fires, it's not only people's homes being destroyed, but the homes and the habitats of animals.
Mm-hmm.
So it's particularly, you know, you think of Australia and you think of koalas. So in my social media, there's been a lot of videos that I've seen. You know, there was one of a bicyclist giving a koala some water
mm-hmm.
Because these koalas are being dehydrated. They're also homeless, and so they're and a lot of them have burned. So I was reading this article, and it says that the Australia's environment minister has said that up to 30% of koalas may have been killed in the country's ongoing bushfire crisis. And so not only the death of people that we're taking into account, but also the impact that this is going to have on koalas, because that's just like right now, and we don't know the toll it's going to have on future for them to procreate in the future. So, and they were saying it's not just koalas, but also just any animal that's living in the habitats where they're being burned down. So, and that just makes me sad because they're now, you know, they're saying that they're going to be endangered at this point. And there was reports that they were like functionally extinct, and then people came out and were saying like, no, like that's an exaggeration. But I was reading a line from this article that says that in December that a government inquiry was told that thousands of koalas had been killed and the fires were so large that we will probably never find the bodies. And it just, like, it's just sad. You know, you read about, and, you know, people are tying this to climate change. But believe it or not, they're saying that on paper, this is the hottest summer that they're having, because their summer's just starting, that they're having so far in, like, the at least the decade. So regardless of whether you believe in climate change or global warming or whatever.
I don't understand how you can believe in it. It's, like, it's not a religion. Like, what do you, it's not a religion. Like,
it exists without you. Yes. But, like, you got to face the fact that temperatures are rising and they have consequences.
Yes.
So you can't ignore the consequences. And I think it's just really sad. And seeing it, and, you know, this also prompted our topic today, because I was just telling Ebony, it was really hard for me to just, you know, enjoy and be super positive about this year when you're seeing a lot of things that you feel really anxious about. So, that wraps up our In the Know segment. And now we'll transition into our What's Being Slept On segment, where Ebony and I continue to talk about our anxieties and worries about 2020 and also about the upcoming decade.
So I strongly suggest that you wake the fuck up.
Okay, so now for our What's Being Slept On segment.
Yes.
So, you know, I'm sure that a lot of people right now are in the midst of, you know, thinking about New Year's resolutions and vision board planning and, just, you know, setting goals and things like that for the year forward. And if you're a semi, I think I straddle the fence between type A and B, though, honestly. But if you're a type A-ish person like me, you probably, like, have a 10-year or a decade-long vision board, too. And so, you know, positivity and things like that, I guess maybe what we're trying to highlight is that positivity and being and looking for – and, yeah, having a positive eye, looking forward to the future – does not exist without context, you know, and it's very important to consider what else is going on, not just in your life, but, you know, not just in your region or in the country, but the world at large. So what are things that are happening that we might be a little bit anxious about or that we may not feel so positively about that could affect, you know, our positive outlook on kind of life in the world and, you know, just our confidence about our ability to meet certain goals in the future. And so Zelma and I have done quite a few episodes about anxiety, and so you know that we both kind of have our own struggles, but something that she really emphasized before we started recording and that I started to think about, because I have been one of those people that have been posting, like, or that has posted sort of positive recaps of the decade that has passed and, you know, about what I am looking forward to in this decade now. And I hadn't done a whole lot of thinking about some of my, like, fears and things like that. And I guess, and what I was explaining to her is that I feel like I just am perpetually anxious. And, you know, the world from my perspective or the country and, like, people in general, there's kind of this, like, constant state of, like, sadness, you know, and then you focus on the happiness to kind of distract from that. But it's important to think about it and to consider it head on, so that when there are really sad things, like, you know, like say this whole fire in Australia, right? Mm-hmm. But then you do have people that deny that climate change exists. And by denying that, they are, you know, they're avoiding having to do any work or taking on any accountability to try to mitigate it. So then you see things like that and you're like, wow, it's only gonna get worse. You know, like we're seeing these fires happen annually, all like in different places across the world, floods, massive like hurricanes and tropical storms. Like there are countries that are islands that are being wiped out, mm-hmm. and there are still people that say they don't believe in it and that they don't have any plans on even fucking recycling. You know, like recycling. They don't have any plans of recycling. It's the most basic thing. People don't. God. Anyways, I could go on and on, which, I mean, I guess we will do.
Yeah.
But, yeah, these are just the sorts of things that I think maybe that Zelma was – maybe had in mind with this segment. And then also with your baby. And,
yeah. You know. And it's for me personally, and I've discussed this throughout some of this episodes, but, you know, I've been diagnosed with major depression in my life, as well as suspected generalized anxiety disorder. And so when you have anxiety or when you have depression, they sometimes – well, for me, they go hand in hand, and for other people as well. So if my anxiety is triggered, then usually my depression will be triggered. Or if my depression is triggered, that will usually trigger my anxiety. So this episode kind of was inspired by this post that I – so I follow this Instagram that everyone should follow, but it's called Mental Wealth. And so they made a post that said it's okay to start 2020 not okay. And then they go into this caption and say, yes, we may see all these people celebrating, happy, kissing. Let's be happy for those people. But I don't know. But I know it makes you feel like shit because you start to think, what about me? I want to tell all my people suffering right now, it's okay. Life is a marathon, not a sprint. Mm-hmm. We're going to get through our ups and downs. And at times, it seems like there are more downs than ups. But let's keep moving forward for our family or even just for ourselves. I woke up at 12 a.m. to give my family, who was currently at my house, a hug and kiss. But now it's 5:36 a.m. and I woke up pretty depressed. But I know we'll be all right. Let's go, Mental Wealth family. I truly love y'all and I wish you guys nothing but the best. And I like this post because it's like the roller coaster of emotions that I think someone with depression will understand, which is at sometimes you can feel sad, being like, why don't I feel happy like mm-hmm. other people? Mm-hmm. And then you feel happy and you're like, oh, I'm going to hug my family because I feel happy right now. Then 5 hours pass and you're like, oh, wow, I'm depressed. So I think like sometimes people, you know, it's hard to explain to people, like with me, like explaining to my partner what depression is, how it's different than just being down or just having a bad day. And so in this Instagram that I follow, a page that I follow, they're always talking, being really transparent about their struggle with and depression and what it feels like. So if you want to follow a page like that, go to Mental Wealth, Mental, MentalWhealth. And it really helps me. But in watching, in like reading that post, it made me feel kind of validated in a way, because while a lot of people around me were really excited about 2020 and really optimistic, and like I saw Sierra's post about how like 2020, like you know, is the year to get it, and having goals and doing things and being like, yeah, a part of me does feel that. Like this year, I'm gonna start a job, you know, I'm gonna graduate. I'm very excited about these things that are happening to me. But there's another aspect of me, as I was telling Ebony, that gets really anxious. And so while I was reading about these koalas and then reading about what was happening in Iraq, and then reading about the presidential election and who's dropping out, who's still in, who's mad at who, and then just going on Instagram, even on Instagram when you try to escape things, and then seeing like people are mad about this, like, 2019 recap rap. And it's just, like, there's just so many aspects of my life that just trigger a lot of my anxiety, a lot of things. And I was, as I was telling Ebony, I think a part of that is being a mom now, where I look to not just my life and my future, but also what will life be like in 10 years. So in 10 years, my son will be, like, 11. And I just kind of worry about what the world would be like for him. What will he grow up in a place where there are no such things as this type of animal? Will he grow up in a place where he doesn't even know who, like, even talking about Whitney Houston, like, that will just be a historical person. Like, so just, and they'll only have movies about the ending and, you know, just, I don't know. I just get into my moments where I get really, really scared. And so I wanted, like, for Ebony and I just to talk about, you know, maybe top three things that we were most anxious and worried about. And so for one, I mentioned was, you know, just the type of world that my son will live in terms of the biggest thing is school shootings and mass shootings. I'm gun violence in general. I'm very terrified of the type of school environment that my son will have. Even, like, you know, with Sandy Hook, it was kindergartners that were shot. So there's no, like, oh, I don't have to worry about that till high school. It's like it could happen at a movie, at a park, at a you know, at a concert. And so that really scares me. Two, the climate change, reading about what's happening in Australia just makes me feel, like, it's helpless that not everyone cares like I think we should, and what can I do over here? And I just feel like the people who should be caring, like our president, just don't, and that's just really frustrating. And then I think the third biggest thing that scares me is honestly how real white supremacy is getting. I'm in a app called Nextdoor. And you share things that happen in your neighborhood. And I live in a nice neighborhood thanks to my partner. It is it's like a trendy neighborhood. And it's right off of this really nice neighborhood that even, like, famous baseball players live in. And so in the Nextdoor thing, they were talking about how apparently my neighborhood is a hot spot for white supremacist hangouts. Like, there's apparently a gathering. They didn't disclose where, but they said there's a diner that I would go to sometimes because it's next to my middle school, that that's where they like to go. And they like to go there after a meeting, apparently, and just eat. And, like, the thought of white supremacists, like, being in my neighborhood made me feel a level of scared that I hadn't felt before. Because we're aware, especially as a sociologist, that white supremacy is toxic, that it is violent, that it is, you know, is it has created a lot of terrible consequences for the society. But to know that there are actual people who believe that they are not only better than me, but that some people believe that I should not exist, and that I, you know, drive through these places and eat in these places, and I could eat with my son, makes me just feel scared. And it made me sad that I was scared. It's like, how in 2019 am I scared that a white supremacist might say something that makes me feel like I'm unsafe? So I think those were the three things that kind of I've been wrestling with and thinking about, and just, you know, even talking about them makes me feel a little better to know that, yes, I am looking forward to a lot of good things that are happening this year, but those are three things in particular that I've been kind of struggling to not be okay with, because I never want to be okay with, you know, just always feeling miserable, but, like, just be okay with the fact that I'm not okay, you know, with those things. Yeah. What about you? Are there, like, some things that...
Yeah. I mean, okay, so, like, I was telling you, like, I had not thought about this stuff. And I think it's because, you know, the same things that I feel anxious about for the decade moving forward are things that I always kind of feel anxious about. But I think, and this could also be, you know, me coming to the end of, like, life as a student, me, like, coming toward the end of my twenties. But I think that I am kind of losing that, like, that layer of like, oh, I can change the world, you know, that sort of comes with being a college student and being, you know, being a Democrat in your 20s. Like, you just kind of feel like, I'm going to solve things. I'm going to help. And I just, I don't know. When I started reflecting and preparing for this segment, I started thinking about some of the things that I may never see change in my lifetime, you know? And I think, you know, the two things that are tied at the top of that list are racism and capitalism, you know? And I guess maybe below, like underneath that are like, you know, people kind of being good and like considerate. Like, so I'm losing sort of, you know, the hope that I had that one day there will be an end to people of color's suffering, you know, where we'll just kind of all be on equal footing and the color of your skin just, it, I mean, like, we won't be colorblind. Like, we will see it, but it won't necessarily equate to worse life chances just because you were born as a member of this race group. You know, like, we're seeing, like you were just saying, like, we're seeing a resurgence of all these things that we thought we had put to bed. So if we're starting up again with white supremacy and, well, at least with it being in the public eye, you know, like, if you can, with it being in the public eye, and, I mean, that's kind of like starting from scratch.
But now they're like a protect. Now it's like, then it was like, oh, you're scared of them because it might be violent. Now it's like, oh, they have a right to think this way.
And it's, I mean, it would, like, are we in 2020? Are we in the 60s? You know, it's crazy. So the fact that that is something that is brewing up again, and we're at the point where you have a baby, like, I will start a family soon. Like, the fact that that our children, we could be raising children that are experiencing a life that not even we experienced as kids.
Yeah, that's true,
You know, so they're, in a lot of ways, like, worse off socially, at least.
And
you know, because, I mean, aspect, the 90s, like, I don't know. It felt like a different, you know, and that was a period where our parents were saying to us, like, oh, you just don't know how good you got it, you know? Will we be saying that kind of stuff to our kids?
You know, I didn't have any shooting drills in elementary or middle school.
We were doing earthquake drills.
Earthquake drills.
That was pretty much the extent of it, you know? And then we were coming from generations who had been doing, you know, nuclear drills and stuff like that. So that was a step up. It's like, okay, now we're trying to protect you from things that happen naturally. You know, like, and we, I mean, there are people that kill kids. Just because.
And just kids that kill kids, which is, I think, scary, too, because it's like, okay, if it's an adult, you're like, that person's crazy. Like, they're just terrible. But then when you have, like, a 15 or a 16 or 17-year-old killing a kid, killing kids, and you're like, you really don't know who to protect your child from. It's like, what do I teach my kid? Like, if you teach them, be good to everyone. Because it used to be, oh, Columbine. When we were, when I was growing up, it was Columbine. And, oh, because they were bullied. So don't bully people because you never know what's going on in their heads. And they, you know, they might be so angry. But now it's like, they don't have to be bullied. They might be really privileged.
Or it could be online bullying.
Your
kid is not even the one perpetrating it.
They just happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time.
In the wrong place at the wrong time is school. Like,
in class, like, where they should be.
And you can't, we can't, it's no more like, don't talk to strangers. Like, it's not as simple as it was for us growing up. Like, don't take anything from anybody. Like, as long as you do what you're supposed to do, you'll be fine. That's no longer the case, you know? And we, and I think that what makes it worse is not just that these things are occurring, but that they're also being we aren't doing anything. We aren't taking any preventative measures, you know, like, as a country. So doing nothing about guns, doing nothing about mental health and mental wellness. Like, there's just nothing being done. It's like, this is something that's being folded into our, like, society's landscape and just an accepted part of our lives.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
Like school shootings, it's just normal now. Back when it happened, when we were growing up in the early 2000s, it was insane.
Yeah.
Like, Columbine was like the craziest thing that we'd heard about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That had ever happened. It was so unusual.
Yeah, it's like you heard school shooting, oh, Columbine. Now you say school shooting, it's like, which one?
Yeah.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, so that kind of stuff scares me. And I think, you know, just our country's complacency is really scary, because that will negatively affect us regardless of what's going on. So if you're unwilling to, and I mean, even tied to capitalism. So like one thing I was talking to Selma about before we started recording was how we were watching this documentary, and there was a woman talking about her journey into, now she's like I think it was on Shark Tank actually, but now she's like a millionaire, and she initially wanted to get into preventative healthcare, but she realized that like she couldn't, you know, I mean, you can't break into the medical industry trying to interrupt or disrupt their like money making schemes and strategies, right? So getting into preventative healthcare is like taking the money out of their pockets, because they profit on people being sick.
Yeah.
So even if you have a cure for something as common as like the flu, you know, then people are not paying for flu shots. People are not paying for medicine and all, you know, all of this other stuff. And so she was saying how you aren't allowed to make money. You aren't allowed to develop cures, you know? And so things like, so something like capitalism and how, and you know, I try to preface this by saying that by being, you know, being against capitalism doesn't necessarily equate to being in favor of communism or socialism or whatever. So I don't know what system we need. I just know that this one doesn't work, because it allows for you to make something like medicine a for-profit industry. When people are dying, people are dying because they can't afford it. Like, that's insane. And that's something that we just accept.
Yeah.
And it just seems normal to us, but it has been normalized, but it's not normal. Like, that's insane that we allow people to die because they don't have the money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I just thought of, so, you know, my brother was, so we had a cat who had diabetes, and he was prescribed insulin. And diabetes, insulin for cats is expensive, but a lot, you know, some people are paying thousands of dollars for insulin, unfortunately, now, because there's no regulation. So our cat died, and my brother was just selling the leftover insulin for like $40 on Craigslist. Wow. And some guy, oh my gosh, I'm going to tear up. Some guy like came up and said that he ran out of insulin.
Yeah,
so
crazy.
He bought the cat insulin for himself.
Yeah,
and so my brother just gave it to him, because it's like, and he was honest. He was just like, I don't have a cat. This is for me. I don't have any more insulin. And at that point, it didn't really, because I hadn't read enough about how bad insulin had gotten, because this was a couple years ago. But just thinking about it, it's like, you know, it last resort to go on, one, to go on Craigslist to look for insulin, and two, to get to the point where you're like, I don't even know if cat insulin works as well on humans. But the fact that this man was desperate enough to like use that for his medicine that keeps him alive just makes me sad. And it makes me feel like, what do we do to make this better? Mm-hmm. And so that's why I have these highs of like, I live in this country where my mom as an immigrant came, and now I'm able to be get a doctorate and get a PhD and become a professor. And my mom is cleaning houses, and now her daughter's a professor. And then I turn around and this man is buying insulin for cats for himself, and it's the same country. And so I'm just kind of like, you know, I don't always just have this one-sided experience. Everything is always mixed. And so, I don't know.
As it like, should be.
Yeah. And but, yeah, when you were talking about that, I was like, oh, my, I hadn't even thought of this in years. But I remember my brother telling me that and how, you know, my mom was crying because, you know, this man was Hispanic and or Latino. And we were just crying because we as part of us understood. Like, we were like, yeah, we could see, because my mom didn't have insurance. She just got insurance now. But we could see being desperate and in need to do that.
Yeah. No, there are people that take fish antibiotics because they can't afford, like, actual, like, it's the same, it has the same, like, properties and ingredients. Mm. It was actually during the 6 months between undergrad and grad school that I didn't have insurance. And so I was, like, Googling, and There are message boards where people are talking about the specific fish antibiotics that you could take if you got sick, like because they can't afford the actual medication.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah. For medicine, things people need to live.
Yeah. And it's so how, I mean, I was going to ask a stupid question, but I was going to say, like, how valuable is human life? But in the United States, I don't think it's valuable at all. It is not valued at all because it's not valued over profit. Mm. Like money, the value of money supersedes human life.
Yeah.
Because there are people that it's like gut, you know, that we won't even regulate guns
that
because
kill
we don't want to lose money.
Yeah.
But yeah, people are dying and it increases every year. The number of mass shootings goes up every year. The number of people that die from gun violence goes up every year. And we won't do anything about it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. There's a lot of things that make me anxious. I am very aware of the privilege that I have in now being a citizen and having a partner that makes almost, you know, a little less than twice what I make. But and in having being able to give my child these benefits, but also, you know, being a sympathetic person and a compassionate person, that doesn't mean that just because I am at this moment not suffering or encountering these things, that I don't feel like hurt and just depressed and saddened that there are others, you know, around us who are.
Yeah.
And so I think that 2020 has the potential to be a really great year, but we also, you know, shouldn't, or for me, I don't want to dismiss or overlook the fact that it's also going to be really hard because there's a lot of things that aren't right. And I do, you know, want to take – I think it's important to take moments to be positive, to be reflective, to have vision boards, to have vision board parties, to make lists, to set goals. But I also think it's important for us to not also go to the other end where you're like, well, I live in the best country, in the best country in the world, and there's no wrong. And if you don't like it, then you leave. It's just kind of like we have to be aware that there can be good and bad, that like, there's good and bad in everything. And I think that in the experiences that I've had as an American, I have had very good and am very appreciative to be born in this country at this time. But there are also things about my experience that I don't like and that have been negative. And it's okay to like reflect on that and to be critical of that and not to feel that I just need to be appreciative or on social media I should only be positive or I shouldn't tell people that I'm having these anxious and depressive feelings. And I think with the holidays anyway, people with depression always tend to talk about how it's triggering to, you know, when there's a lot of happiness and joy and you're just kind of like, oh, man, like, I don't know if I feel that happy. Like, oh, you start to doubt. Like, well, then, you know, is it okay to feel what I'm feeling? So that's why, you know, I wanted to read what the person wrote on mental wealth because it's a page that's very transparent and it's very honest. And I think that's how my life is. It's up and down and it's positive and negative. It's anxious, but it's also very hopeful. And I think, like, overall, that's just the type of person that I am. And I just wanted to, like, share real feelings that I have, but also acknowledge that it's not just one end, you know, it's just one half of who I am. And, you know, complement the last episode where I talked about all the great things that I learned in that year with, you know, a lot of the things that scare me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what you're describing, I mean, I think that that's the way that people should be. Like, if you have a streak of empathy in your personality, and if you don't, I think it also says a lot about your character. But we're, like, taught in the United States to be individuals, you know, individuals first, and, you know, and it's like we're pro-individualism. But that also blinds you to what other people are experiencing. And I think if those of us that feel like our lives are good and things like that, if we took more time to think about, to consider ourselves as maybe the exception and not necessarily the rule, we could open our eyes to what other people's lives are like, and that, you know, this country may be the best country in the world for us as individuals. Like, but that does not necessarily mean that everybody else is benefiting in the same way. Because, like, if you think about it, there are still people that do not have clean drinking water.
Yeah, in this country.
In this country right now, like at this exact moment. There are people that celebrated Christmas and the New Year with no clean drinking water.
Yes, that's true.
You know, or people that celebrated Christmas and the New Year homeless.
Mm-hmm.
Or with some kind of debilitating illness.
Or in cages.
Yes, in cages. And, you know, and also illnesses that could be cured, but they can't afford the medicine.
Yeah.
Like, do you think about how hopeless that has to feel to be so close to
have access, like, to be able to access
it. It's like you can see the light, but you can't get to it.
Yeah, I can't.
Because
imagine.
You don't have the money.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think that it's, Like what Zalma was saying, that, you know, we also exist in a country where when you point out these flaws in our system, you are told to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Because you want to improve, you want to improve everyone's quality of life.
Yeah.
Because you value every human experience. You're told to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And so, what I mean, that in and of it, that's the complacency that scares me, is that I think that we are so comfortable as a country in the idea that we are the superpower, that we are the best, that we don't push ourselves to do better.
Mm.
We don't push ourselves to be reflexive and to think about other people's suffering, people that you walk past every day, that you drive past every day, that row of people living in tents. We're complaining about how cold it is and how hot it is and yada, yada, yada. But one, we aren't willing to do anything about it because there's still so many people that claim they don't believe in climate change, the climate change that they're actually experiencing and living through every day. They don't believe in it. But at the same time, there are people living on the streets and enduring that, like, that weather. What?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, when you when you talk about how cold, this is the coldest winter ever, there are people living on the street.
Yeah.
Because, one, there isn't enough space and we don't have enough shelters to accommodate them. And, I mean, the people on the streets are there for varying reasons. You know, the whole narrative about drug use and all these people being drug users, that's one narrative.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people out there because they also lost their homes.
Yeah. Yeah.
The medicine was too expensive.
Yeah, they went into debt.
Yeah, there's so many different reasons. And we just brush it off like it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't matter. And so I don't know. So I guess maybe that would be my call for people in this new decade, is to be more empathetic, to be less individualistic, and to think about how the decisions and the choices that you make impact other people, even other people that you don't know. You know, like, we have to care more about one another. If we say America first, then we need to also be we're saying America first, but we're not even considering all Americans.
That's true. Yeah,
like, we say it and it like means nothing.
Yeah.
America first, you mean like you first. That's what you mean.
No, that's a good point.
Yeah, so let's be considerate of everybody, not just make decisions that only benefit us or a select few minority of people.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that wraps up.
Yeah, so, episode. You know, we hope our honesty, we hope, one, we didn't bum you too up. But if you need a pick-me-up, listen to last week's episode.
Yeah. And maybe go out and do some good.
Like, yeah, that's true.
Go out and, like, just do one good thing, and you might feel better. And even though it's a small thing, maybe, like, I said that I'm feeling less confident in my ability to change the world, but that doesn't mean that I can't help a person.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't mean that I can't, you know, make somebody feel better today.
Yeah.
And so one good thing per day, I think, will give you some hope.
I think, yeah. No, I agree. If you want to give us feedback or, reach out to us for any reason, please email us at woke.ishpodcast@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram at wokeishpodcast. Is it? Yeah, wokeishpodcast. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's been a while. So thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. We hope it was helpful, if not only to get like a deeper sense of who we are, but also to in some sort, you know, if you're feeling kind of alone in your feelings about some of the stuff that you're seeing online or on the news, just know that we're there with you, and that, like Ebony said, you know, it's good to feel these feelings, but also, you know, important to feel motivated to do whatever it is that you can in your network to improve the space that you live in some way.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for listening, and until next week.
Bye.